Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Let's go. Hour three of four. Hit it, Tony. No Cubs game means that I have a radio show to do tonight, which has been fun so far and a little bit crazy. We talked with Alicia Roman earlier about the weather and when and if it's ever going to allow for there to be baseball in Chicago. Maybe tomorrow will be the night. The Cardinals are in town. They were supposed to play tonight. They didn't, even though the weather kind of got better. Maybe they'll play tomorrow. If they do play tomorrow, we will have the game for you, starting with our pregame at 6:30. Kelly Kroll covers every game for the Chicago Cubs, does an incredible job. Whether she's at the game or in the studio or out doing beer money, which she ended up having to do tonight, she joins me now here on The Score. What's up, Kelly?
How are you, Lawrence? It's quite the introduction, and I am crossing my fingers along with you that, yes, they play tomorrow. And truth be told, you're absolutely right. Tonight's weather, no doubt, hands down, better than what they played in on Saturday. That was the worst I have ever seen in the 4 years of being with the team, ever. It was unbelievable. Every single player that walked out of that dugout was like, wait, what? What are we doing? Wait, we're playing in this? And off they went. But it became what is probably going to be one of the most memorable comeback wins that they've had as a team together that I remember. So it ended up being okay, right? You got to get the W if you're going to play in something like that.
Well, and the way that they went about it was incredibly dramatic. And, yeah, it was a four-hour baseball game, but in terrible conditions. What was it like to cover that game?
Miserable. Honestly, I mean, I love me some baseball, and I love these guys and this team, and they're a blast to be around, but it was miserable. I was standing there in the dugout with most of them, which now is, of course, really newly renovated. So I will say that in comparison to years past, the heaters that they have in the dugout, I do get to sort of feel like the remnants of what the wind blows now in my direction. So I suppose that helped a little bit, but no, it was brutal. The freezing rain that was coming down because of the winds, as we all know, coming off the lake, 30 miles an hour, it was spitting it straight into their faces and on that third base side. That's the direction it was coming. So it didn't matter if you were under the roof of the dugout or not. I mean, it was just coming straight into your face. I have no idea how any of the pitchers were able to grip the ball at all. And I think every inning I was watching the hand warmers being handed out over and over again. And at one point, Ian Happ actually walked up and asked me, I'm wearing my massive snow boots, right, the ones with the fur and everything, if I thought he could put cleats on the bottom and go play in those. I mean, they were cold. They were cold. They were wet. Poor Javi Baez, you know, just it lays out for one in the first inning and then has to kind of wear it the whole game. It's bad enough, as we all know, to be cold. It's even worse when you're wet and damp and it stays that way the whole 4 hours, Lawrence. It never gave up. So it was not a fun time, but because they won, it turned into a pretty darn good day. I'll tell you what, for those guys,
I was impressed with the at-bats that those guys had in the bottom of the eighth inning, because you would think in a situation where the weather is terrible, you just kind of want to get out of there. And they worked at bats to rally. What was it, 9 runs on 3 hits or whatever it was?
You got it. Yeah. And in one inning with 2 outs, most of it. And most of that work was done with 2 outs. And you're right. I mean, let's be honest, who would have, shamed those guys for packing it in and going home, right? I think everyone would have been like, yeah, all right, we get it. Down 10-2. Like, let's get out of here. Let's come back and just win us a game tomorrow kind of thing. But no, that's not what they did. And being where I sit in the dugout, it was really kind of fun to watch the vibe change in that inning. And I give Anthony Rizzo credit, because this guy, who you know would have just killed to be on the field helping his team out, he was in the dugout, true story, taking guys' jackets and going in front of the heater and warming them up and then taking them back to him. And then he was warming up the, like, cups of water and taking them over to guys. He was being, like, the biggest cheerleader slash, you know, guy, teammate, supporter, rooter honor, if you will, that he possibly could be. And I kind of had to laugh at that and just think, you know, that's pretty cool. It's pretty cool to watch Anthony be the teammate he can be, the best teammate he can be, there in the dugout when he can't go play. He's going to do literally everything to try and help his teammates out, even warming up the jackets, you know, being the water boy.
I know that they would love to have Anthony Rizzo back. I understand that, but I'm wondering if this weather that the Cubs are still in, whether it makes sense for a guy that's been struggling with some back issues to go out there and play.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And I think that's part of today. It's almost a relief probably to him that he didn't have to get out there in this weather and try to swing a bat. Now, I know he says he feels, you know, 100% again, but anybody who has back issues or any kind of muscle issue that they deal with cold weather, they know how it tightens up and how it can lock up in just a quick second. And you've made a really good point. And I don't know that there's a right or a wrong answer other than he wants to play. And this is the conditions. He knows what April and Chicago can bring. Now, obviously, this is one of the worst that we've seen in a long time, but he wants to get out there. So I think you got to let him do it. But I think you have to also trust that he will tell you what he's feeling, right? Like, he knows his body well enough to know if this isn't a good idea, let's not push it. We don't need to do that in April. So I think we'll wait and see. I mean, they got two more here and then they head out to Colorado. So also, you know, they're still up and down with temperatures there. It's funny, Colorado can go from 70 degrees this time of year to 30 as well. So they can be all over the map equally.
What's been his biggest struggle physically?
Anthony Rizzo?
Yeah.
The back. I mean, it's scary to hear someone his age tell you that, like, it just locks up on him. I mean, he has dealt with this now for a few years, but I don't think it's ever been, as he told me, it's never been this early in the year, which that kind of, you know, I kind of thought about that twice and didn't think that that was a good thing to be hearing. But he said that it always tends to happen when he goes to Cincinnati. Now, I think that's kind of funny. I mean, I think he was, you know, a little bit sort of dogging Cincinnati in the hotel they stay in there a bit just because the mattresses aren't the best. Now, I don't know if that's something they look into. I mean, he joked that he would sleep on the floor the next time they went there. And for anyone who's had back problems, they probably know exactly what he's talking about. But he, I think, will do something. I think for me, what scares me the most is thinking about how young he still is and what that means physically for him that he needs to be doing or changing with his routines, right? I mean, is there more core work that needs to be going into his off-season workouts? Is there more treatment that he needs to be doing ahead of time to sort of, you know, be aware of this? I don't know, but I do think that he and the doctors with the Cubs have been talking about different things that they want to try moving forward. And you know, Anthony, I mean, he'll be on top of it. I mean, he's one of the best in the league. He's one of the most consistent players. He does not miss games. He hates missing games. And he'll figure out what's best for his body, I'm sure, moving forward.
Kelly Krall covers the Cubs for NBC Sports Chicago. She does an incredible job doing it. We're spending a few minutes with her here on The Score. Let's talk beer money. So,
let's talk beer money. That's what we're coming back from tonight. It was at Leader Bar in Lincoln Park tonight. Lawrence, I know if you hadn't had the show, you would have been out there. I know you would have.
Well, I love beer money, and I actually think that I'm going to be, from what I'm hearing, Alex Brown and I are going to be doing some stuff over at Buffalo Wings and Rings, and I think there's going to be a beer money component to that during the draft.
Yep. Luke and I are going to be out there as well. Sarah, of course, Lauk has put this all together, the mastermind behind all this. And you and Alex will be out there. Luke and I will be out there. And I think we're all going to share some responsibility. So are you ready for that?
Yeah, I'm all for it. I haven't been a guest, and I'd love to ask some questions of people if we get the opportunity to. I don't have as cool of a t-shirt collection as you do, though. That's my concern.
You know, I could probably help.
Okay. All right. Okay. You're going to have to be the stylist. Like, we're going to have to find some good t-shirts and then make that happen. What did you end up doing tonight? Oh, did we lose Kelly?
Places.
Oh, wait. There you are. All right. We lost you for like a second.
I'm sorry, we're pulling up right now to our downtown stadium. I just said bye to my crew, and now hopefully you won't lose me some more. I'm walking into the studio.
Oh, goodness gracious. That place is a dungeon. We're totally going to lose you.
Well, let's hope not. So yeah, you'll have the questions ready to go. And, you know, our fans have really been great about the show coming on. And we had a great, great crowd out there at Leader Bar in Lincoln Park. A lot of really knowledgeable fans. So it's been fun to watch this show grow throughout the years. And of course, it's just also fun to give away money that's not your own.
Yeah, you can give away the money, and it was nice to get people inside today.
Yes.
Considering what the conditions were this morning, where you wake up and you see snow out on your lawn and everything else. So that's great. I'm glad that you had that chance. I'm glad that we're going to get the opportunity during the draft to kind of hang out and do some of that.
We're going to have a blast.
We're going to have a really good time. I don't know if we'll have as good a time as you had with Kyle Schwarber breaking down your swing in the batting cage.
I don't know if that was a good time or if that was like, okay, Kelly, you know, swallow your pride, have a few laughs with this, you know, enjoy it. No, Kyle was such a good sport about that. So the deal was, as probably a lot of your listeners know, Chris Bryant did an event with Red Bull out at Slugger's. And there were some targets put up in the batting cages upstairs, and KB was trying to hit the targets. Well, the media that was covering it, he turned and kind of asked some of us to jump in there. So, yeah, leave it to me to think, I can do this, right? You know, I play college tennis. I got good hand-eye coordination. This won't be too bad. But I feel like people should know when they watch this video that I have never at any level played softball or even t-ball for that matter. I just really didn't get into that, so I didn't even know where I was really supposed to be standing, other than, you know, I watched Rizzo really crowd the plate, so I thought, you know, I can do that, choke up on the bat, I got this. Well, Kyle was really he tried to give me as positive of a critique as he could, but you could tell he was stumped there at the beginning. He was like, well, it's an athletic stance. That's the best you can give me, guys. That was about the best you can give me. And then after that, that's when you know it's bad, right? You're like, oh, he's talking about my stance. So in other words, nothing to do with my swing. But then once I did get a few swings in, he just mentioned to me that I really have to work on my lower half, which makes sense because in tennis, it's a lot more of the upper body and the wrist that you're focused on. Now, granted, your legs have a lot to do with it too, but so, yeah, let's just say it didn't translate, Lawrence, and leave it at that.
You know what? I am not going to let you besmirch yourself here on the Score airwaves. You made contact.
I did make contact every time, basically.
That's what I thought was good.
You get the ball back.
Right. Like, you were at least able to put the bat on the ball. And that's where I thought that your tennis skills would clearly show, because I don't think that it would scare. There are a lot of people who, if they've never played baseball or softball, being in a batting cage can scare you a little bit because of the speed of the pitch. But I'm sure that you've taken serves that have been around 100 miles an hour and returned them.
Yeah.
So that shouldn't have scared you at all.
Yeah, no, I guess that's very kind of you. Thank you. We can look at that as a positive. No, I wasn't scared in there, and I aggressively went towards the ball. I just did it with my upper body and my wrist, and not using the whole, you know, as they call it, you know, their lower body and really loading up. And I didn't understand that. But moving forward, now I do, and I'm hoping Chili Davis can kind of step in and give me some pointers as well. But one of the things, you know, Kyle did say off camera, aside from don't quit your day job, was that I did make contact often, and if we just needed to get the ball in play, maybe he would mention to Madden that, you know, one of these days we could look down and suit me up, right? So who knows, Lawrence? Who knows where this leads to, right? I put the ball in play. If nothing else, I'm not afraid of the 90-mile-an-hour fastball that's coming at me, right?
Well, here's the thing, Kelly. With all the doubleheaders that the Cubs are going to have to play, they're going to be able to expand that roster to 26. And you never know. Like, maybe a guy can't make it from Iowa, and they got to go to Crawl. They got to get that Crawl jersey out and put it in the dugout.
Oh, my gosh, my dad would just be so proud of me. Who would have guessed, you know, stepping in there and helping the guys out? Hey, whatever I got to do to take one for the team, right?
Well, wait, the tennis players don't have numbers, so what number would go on your jersey?
Ooh, that's That's a really great question. If I'm not stealing someone's number, I don't think I am, since I would probably go with 24.
Okay.
That was my basketball number. I mean, I was double checking, thinking through the roster. We don't have a 24 that I'm aware of, do we?
I don't think so.
I don't think so. I think that might have been Dexter's number back when he was here.
Yes.
You know, so I think I might go. That was my basketball number in high school. And, you know, it was the reverse of at the time. Yeah, it was Kobe's number. And it's the reverse of Jackie, right? So
yep.
I could go that route.
All right. Well, good. Well, see, now we got to tell the people over the Cubs, just have it ready. Just have it ready, just in case. You know, July 21st, there's a doubleheader. There's going to be more doubleheaders as the season goes on. And just have that if they need to you know, sign you to a deal and bring you up.
I love it. This is great. Will you be my agent for this?
Are you kidding? I'm all over this because here's the way I sell it. I sell it as you being the John Lester, like you doing the John Lester thing, where maybe they don't need someone to hit the ball out of the ballpark. They need to run a suicide squeeze or a safety squeeze. Uh-huh. And we know that John Lester can do that. And with you being able to put the bat on the ball, I think that's a good selling point for you and Madden if they run into that situation.
That's a great, great play right there out of you. And I also think we could sell the fact that no one has a scouting report on me, right? Like, I'm a diamond in the rough. I mean, how about that? I mean, no one's pulling up my tennis, like, files from, you know, 8 years ago or whatever. So I think that could really work to our advantage.
Here's the scary part. Knowing the Cubs, Jed and Theo have probably already seen your tape.
Yep.
Like, they've already...
Oh, I'm sure, right?
They have already got the pluses and minuses on you already. I'm waiting for their scouting report.
I can't wait till the next time I bump into them and they do tell me how they broke down my tape. I can just see it coming. That would so be something Jed would do, and he would give me a hard time. You know, I actually, Jed's daughter, I taught her in tennis, like a couple lessons. So that would be something he would bring and then give me a hard time about. There's no doubt about it.
100%. Kelly, you are the best. Thanks so much for jumping on the show. I know that you were incredibly busy. Did you verbally punch Chris Ronji when you were on down in St. Louis today or no?
Well, I did throw him under the bus and roll it forwards and backwards back over him a couple times. I'm not going to lie. I mentioned to the guys how tough it is for all of us here in Chicago to have babysat him for so many years. But we're glad now that, you know, St. Louis has that responsibility, and we get to see him, you know, just on the weekends kind of thing.
That's right. You are 100% right, and probably see him too often on the weekends here in Chicago. Kelly, I'll see you soon. Thanks for being on the show.
Perfect. I can't wait. Thank you so much for having me. Have a good one, Lawrence.
That's Kelly Krull of NBC Sports Chicago. Salt of the earth right there. The video is up, actually, on NBC Sports Chicago with Kyle Schwarber critiquing Kelly in the batting cage. I haven't been to the cages in a little while. Herbie, we should do that. I mean, because for some reason, we just, like, the Score softball team just disbanded.
Yeah, it's bad. Where were they at? We're at, like, a...
At Sluggers.
At Sluggers? Is there, like, a Chris Bryant?
Yeah.
And a Kerry Wood batting cage now?
Yep.
Yeah, I'll do that.
We'll go over there? Oh, okay. Yeah, we'll go over there and swing a little bit.
Where's the place we used to go? Stella's?
Yeah, we go to Stella's out in Lyons, which is fun.
A little far from me now.
It is. The last time that I was there, though, I had a good time. White Panther kind of challenged me and was like, so why don't you get in that 80-mile-per-hour cage and let's see what's cracking. And I'm like, okay. And I took a couple pitches. I was like, okay, got the timing now. Let's go. And I started hitting him, and she was actually impressed.
Didn't jam yourself?
No. I mean, you know me. I'm always trying to go to right field anyway, so I guess technically I was jamming myself, but I was still getting around on it, which is not bad. For not really hitting a baseball in 20 years, to be able to jump into the 80 cage and get a bat on the ball, I was impressed with myself.
Since I'm never going to win the lottery, I'm going to give my idea up for a new batting cage. So somebody out there who's rich, do this and also give me the credit for it.
Okay.
You know how they have batting cages or golf cages or the ranges with the points and such?
Oh, yeah.
What's that called?
Top Golf.
Yeah. I want to make that, but with betting with like a Wrigley Field or a U.S. Cellular or whatever, guaranteed rate field, like where you can hit home runs or you can hit the ball in the gap, you get points. You hit a solid single, you get points, and you face your friends.
Okay, I don't think that that's a terrible. I'm trying to think of how it would be laid out.
Just kind of like the Top Golf is, where you've got levels, you only have, and it just goes up.
Yeah, but where are the baseballs coming from?
They're coming from the cage.
Okay.
Oh, you can't go up because of the damn thing.
Yeah. Right,
that's a problem. So then you have to have one level with only like five cages, though.
Right. But and still, like, how far away are the cages from each other? Because you're going to foul some off.
But there's walls in between.
And if there's a...
And if you hit the wall, you didn't hit that home run.
If you hit the wall, you're probably going to ricochet onto yourself.
Something soft, so it absorbs it. It's not going to hit hard.
It's. I'm saying it's a good idea. We just need to workshop it a little bit more.
Yeah.
It could work. Top cage. You know, call it top cage.
Yeah, how people don't, you know, they can't go to Wrigley and hit a home run because there's like rare opportunities to do that. Like you have to be knowing somebody to get on the field at Wrigley. Instead, make a Wrigley field and invite people to come.
The
lines will be out the window. I mean, out of the door.
I think it'd be great. I've thrown pitches at Sox Park. I haven't hit there.
Yeah, you won the championship.
I did. It was a long time ago, though.
It's like 2 years ago.
I think it was 4 years ago.
That long?
Yeah. It was so much fun.
Who did you beat? Like Cheryl Scott?
No, it was, let's see. I beat Megan Glaros in the first round. And no one thought I could beat. It was really like kind of insulting, honestly, that no one thought I could beat Megan Glaros. And I was like, while I wasn't a great baseball player, I did get pro tryouts. I'm like, and Megan actually did really well. She did really well. Because, you know, a lot of people, if they're not doing baseball stuff, like, and one of the things I told her, I said, you need to aim higher than you think from the mound because a lot of people just end up throwing the ball on the ground. And so she did well. And then I beat Jay Nice. And then it was Jen Latta. In the last round, it was me versus Jen Latta. But the cool part about that, and I wish the White Sox would do it again, because I do need to defend my title. Last I checked, I'm still champion. The cool part about it is I told Sale, because Sale was catching, and I said, listen, I'm going to let this one go. Like, I'm going to actually throw it. Because, you know, I was really just, I'm going to lob it over the plate. We're going to play catch with whoever is back there. And I said, I would really like to throw this one, like full wind up the whole nine yards. And he was like, okay. He's like, throw it. He's like, I got one rule. Do not bounce it. I was like, okay. He's like, because I'm not going to, don't be hitting me in the, you know. So I threw it. And I was desperate because I guess Kevin Hart had been there like a couple days before. And he threw out the first pitch and it was like, 55 miles an hour. And I was like, I just want to know that I can throw harder than that at this point in my life. And I did. And I threw my fastball is actually a cutter. So I threw Sale a cutter and he was like, did you throw me a cutter? And I said, yes. And we like talked pitching. And he was like, how'd you grip it? And we talked a little bit about it. It was cool. It was, you know, before the Drake LaRoche stuff. All right. We need to take a break. But I am still defending champion. So Brooks put together another media first pitch thing. And I'll take on all comers. Who won it with Debo? Back after this on The Score. I just posted the video of Kelly in the batting cage and her getting tips from Kyle Schwarber on my Twitter account, at Lawrence W. Holmes is where you can check it out. And honestly, like for someone who's never played baseball, I thought she did great. Baseball's hard, man. And if you've never, like, explaining a batting stance to someone, even so, she's around it every day. Like, it's foreign. It feels weird. Like, how do you hold the bat? Like, all of that stuff. It's a difficult, difficult thing. I thought she did really well.
I do my batting stance based on if it looks cool or not.
You're that guy?
Yep.
Did you even play baseball, or were you just all about basketball?
No, all about basketball.
I figured.
I wanted to play baseball, though, but just never really had the opportunity to.
Can you throw? Because I've noticed that most basketball players can't throw a baseball.
Yeah, I can throw a baseball, yeah. Yeah, I play catch and stuff with mitts, stuff like that.
Okay, all right, because every time I see one of those dudes throwing out a first pitch, I'm like, you're in the NBA. Like, how can you not be able to throw a ball? Strange. Like, you have to make baseball passes in basketball sometimes. It's the same thing. Just throw it. Don't throw it in the dirt. But, yeah, it's up if you want to take a look at it, at Lawrence W. Holmes. By the way, interviews that have happened on the show that you may have missed, like over the last couple of weeks, we've had incredible interviews with Frank Mir. We talked with Mark Schanowski on the show. We had a really cool interview with Dan Pompey. That and just regular show stuff, the actual hours, is podcasted for you without interruption. 670thescore.com/Lawrence Holmes Show. If you want to check out anything that you may have missed, whether it's tonight's show or some other show, it's right there for you, invaluable. I don't know about you, and look, we got to move over to baseball in a little bit. We're going to talk with Scott Merkin, who is up with the team in Minnesota as they didn't play. It was real strange last night watching the Minnesota Bulls. That team has Tibbs coaching it, Derrick Rose, Jimmy Butler, Jamal Crawford, and Taj Gibson. It just felt a little weird watching it. Watching those guys take the Rockets, the best team in the league, down to the wire in a game. And I figured out that there is a player that Andrew Wiggins makes me furious. He makes me furious because you look at him, and I was telling Tony this, Andrew Wiggins is a dude that shows up at the gym, and you're like, I want that dude on my team. And then he plays, and you're like, this guy stinks. You're supposed to be able to be better. Look at you. Look at how you're built. You should be better than everybody at this.
Looks the part guy at pickup game is the worst.
Yes.
Like, I wasted a top pick on you.
Yes.
When we were drafting, and you are nothing.
You're right, Tony. Like, I'm like, man, that guy has like the perfect NBA body. And you're like, where's your game? Where is it?
And the guy that's looking like Raymond Felton, who went last, is out here getting buckets.
Yep. Is Aaron Brooks on that team, too?
The Timberwolves? He is.
Jeez. Someone just texted that in. It's nothing but Bulls on that team. Isn't John Lucas III like in the front office or something like that? I'm not kidding. I think John Lucas III is part of that front office in Minnesota. Tibbs just put the whole band back together up there. How about that terrible decision by Jimmy at the end of the game, though? Oh, what a horrible shot. He loves him some hero ball.
John Lucas III is a member of the Minnesota Timberwolves coaching staff.
Told you.
Named as player development coach.
Told you. JL3. All of the Bulls are up there in Minneapolis.
Herb said that's a made-up job.
It is a made-up job, but, you know, it's not like the Bulls don't have them. Isn't that what Randy Brown does? Or has been doing for 20 years?
Follow the players around. Tell me what they're doing.
Well, there are some people who have called him a snitch. I'm not one of those people. I don't want that type of smoke. But yeah, like all of the old Bulls are there. Derek had a little turn back the clock game yesterday. Offensively. Defensively, ooh-wee, is he bad. I mean, James Harden makes everyone look bad. And why does he make everyone look bad, Tony?
Because he travels.
The step back is not a travel, but the step back and gather is a travel, in my opinion.
He does that a lot.
Yes, he does.
A lot. And nobody seems to care.
You want
to
take the two steps back? I'm not calling travel. but he does two steps and shuffles sometimes.
Because the step back, usually in its original form, is usually a kind of a fadeaway shot.
Yes.
Because of the off-balanceness, because you can't put that second foot down.
Correct.
He uses that second foot to come back down to balance himself for a perfect jump shot when that shouldn't be the case, because that is a travel.
I'm not going to go as far as say call it a travel, but I am going to say that, you know, sometimes he comes down, there's a little shuffle after the two steps. That's all I'm saying.
Charles Barkley said he is the most unguardable player he's ever seen.
You can't guard him.
Because you can't guard that move specifically.
And that foul that they called on Jimmy Butler, where they're near the timeline, I'm like, come on, fam. You got to let him do something. And he acted harder to act like he had been pushed by a 10-ton truck and got the call. But if you're going to give him that call, there's Scottie Pippen in his prime can't guard him if you're giving him that call. All right, we'll take a break. We'll get back to some baseball. What in the world were the White Sox doing up in Minnesota? We'll talk with Scott Merkin about that next on The Score. I haven't had a chance to talk with Scott Merkin so far in this baseball season, and that's a failure on my part. That's my bad that I haven't had a chance to talk with Merk. I figured it'd be a good time to talk with him, though, being that the White Sox haven't played since Thursday. That's bizarre. The Sox are getting ready to take on Oakland. It doesn't look like their game's going to get rained or snowed out there. But Merk was with the boys in Minnesota. Hey, Merk, how you doing?
Lawrence, how you doing? I thought you forgot about me, but I guess not, huh?
No, I never forget about you. You kidding me? No way am I forgetting about you. But
we were just talking on Twitter the other day. We got to get some like HF Mafia t-shirts, I think, for all the media members out here.
I actually think that's a great idea.
It was Amanda Kashub who did I pronounce her last name right?
Kashubi.
I sure hope I did. Kashubi, I left the E out. But I think she was the one who brought it up first, and I think we need to get some shirts for all of us.
Well, that makes sense because she's the smartest of us, so it makes sense that she would come up with the idea.
And that's not a hard list to top either, though, is it?
So, no, it's not. It's really, really not. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing better. I'm doing well. Everything's good, and I got a look at my first April blizzard and I've lived in Chicago pretty much my entire life, barring spring training and Ann Arbor for 4 years, and I've never seen a snowstorm like that in April. I haven't seen many like that in January, for God's sake, let alone April.
So walk me through it. You get to Minneapolis, and they had said that there was the possibility of a foot of snow falling there.
Right.
When you got there, did you even go to the ballpark at all?
Yeah, Thursday was fine. Thursday was great. Actually, we walked back to the hotel from the ballpark Thursday night after, you know, Berrios just pitched a tremendous game. Actually, Giolito was pretty decent in that game, too, for the White Sox. Walked back, and it was still, you know, not summery, but it was decently pleasant out. And then, you know, the next day we heard it was kind of be off and on. And again, I don't know the permutations of this stuff, but if they would have started that game Friday at, like, 11 or 11:30, they probably could have snuck that one in because it didn't really get bad until, like, you know, Friday at, like, 5 or 5:30. And then once it hit, like, Friday night at, like, 9 p.m., that was it. It was an almost absolute blizzard whiteout until like Sunday morning at like, you know, 2 or 3 a.m. And we didn't go to the park Saturday or Sunday. Sunday, the Sox kind of used it as an off day and just got on their bus and got the heck out of Dodge and flew to Oakland. They did work at the ballpark on both Friday and Saturday. And, you know, I'm sure people who follow all these guys on Instagram and Twitter saw the pictures of Moncada out on the field when they were trying to clear the 17 inches of snow off the field. But yeah, we talked to Ricky on the phone Saturday, but that was about it. There was no baseball. There really was, you know, nothing you could do about it. As Ricky said, they got that forecast right. They nailed that one, and you know, so now they have three games. I think the hope was they'd be able to sneak Sunday in somehow. But Lawrence, it was aside from the 17 inches of snow, it was 16 wind chill. So there was just no chance after Thursday. No chance at all.
Yeah, I was happy that they didn't mess around and that the White Sox basically were just like, let's just leave. Let's just go to Oakland right now because it doesn't make sense for us to stick around here for this thing. That made a lot of sense to me, but not the games probably won't matter for the White Sox, But if you're the Twins, they might matter. So how in the world do you make a whole series up?
Well, you know, they announced it today. I think they're playing one doubleheader in the next time they're in Minnesota, which is right, which is the draft time, the 4th through the 8th, I think it is, or something like that. So that's a 4-game series. They're going to play one game on a mutual off day in August. And then here's the kicker. The Sox finished the season, and so does Minnesota, in Target Field. And now that has become a 4-game series instead of a 3-game series. So that could be, like you said, if things play out as, you know, it kind of looks like and people have projected, you know, Minnesota could need 2-3 wins in that. So who knows? You know, maybe it'll be locked down by then. Maybe they'll be out of it. Maybe both teams will be out of it. Who knows? But, I mean, if they're in it, that could be an interesting finish for both teams. And think about who could be on that Sox team at that point, too. So, you know, you're adding an extra game where you may have
Eloy
Kopech pitching. You might have Eloy Jimenez playing the outfield. Who knows what's going to be going on when it comes to the last series of the year.
Talking with Scott Merkin, who writes for MLB.com. He covers the White Sox. He was there in Minnesota with the team. What were the players' reactions to the crazy weather? I saw some of it on Instagram and on Twitter, but what were those guys saying?
You know, I think Ricky made this kind of clear on Saturday when we talked to him. This didn't surprise anyone. You know, they knew coming in what was going on. So I think the players understood. You know, they made sure that they got the size done that had to be done. You know, I don't know where it was in the batting cage or whatever. Guys did hitting they had to. They did the strength and conditioning. So everything was done. It wasn't like they got there and said, holy cow, they're getting a blizzard tomorrow. What are we going to do? They knew what was going on. So they had everything set up. Now, the only thing is, you know, you have guys who are not going to start a game for like, you know, 9-10 days, or 8-9 days, whatever it is, because of the snowstorm. But they seem to get a kick out of it. You know, real cute Instagram of Tim Anderson with his wife walking with their little daughter and, you know, through the snow. And she seemed to be getting, you know, when you're not driving a car or trying to walk around, really, you enjoy the snow, right? I remember when I was young, I loved snowstorms too. But, you know, Moncada seemed, you know, impressed by the size of the snowstorm. But Jose, you know, as always, very honest when he said he didn't seem to have much use for it. He said he's not used to the cold and not used to the snow, even in his fifth year in the majors. And really no one is. I mean, again, it's I'm not like complaining. I'm more awestruck by that. I've just never seen anything like that. At one point on Saturday, I looked out my hotel room window and I couldn't see the street from my hotel. And that's how bad the snow was. And I'm used to that in January in Chicago or maybe December in Chicago, but not April, not tax day in Minneapolis. That was just, it was just crazy.
What do you do with a rotation when you have 3 days where no one pitches?
Well, you know, I'm sure they did some work in there they had to do, and it just stays on, you know, it stays on track now. It's what, Lopez, Gonzalez, Fulmer, and then it'll be Shields and Giolito to start the series against the defending world champs this weekend, where hopefully they'll get a little weather with a team like, you know, a little nice weather with Houston coming to town. Also this weekend, Charlotte makes their closest trip to Chicago, where they have three in Indy and then three in Louisville. So that next week, starting Friday, they'll be about as close as they get to Chicago. So you just, you know, you keep them strong, you make them, you know, you have them do their work and just have them get ready. And it'll be interesting to see tonight in Oakland if there's a little rust when they first start, because not many teams in the middle of the year, except for the All-Star break, get 3 days off in season.
No doubt about it. I watched Michael Kopech pitch on Saturday. That
right.
game was televised on NBC Sports Chicago, which was pretty cool. Is he ready?
You know, I think we can say yes, but it's really for Rick and Kenny and Jeremy Haber and Chris Getz and everyone else to decide. And sometimes you think they might be ready, but they're, you know, they may want to see 2 or 3 more starts, who knows, with his changeup, and really, you know, hone in on that changeup and say, you know, is it where it needs to be? And that's one thing. Well, one of the number of things I think they've done well in this rebuild is last year, you know, there were times where Lopez or Giolito could have come up for a spot start, or you could have brought him up out of the bullpen. And they, you know, the same with Moncada. Moncada was probably, you know, by our definition, ready to come up before they actually called him up. But, you know, I think they're going to make sure these guys kind of cross all the T's and dot all the I's before they get up here. And with that said, you know, I heard some people kind of in the know tell me that Kopech could follow a similar path as Lopez this year. But I really think that Kopech's going to be up before Lopez can up last year. I could see Kopech, just purely on my guess, I think, you know, end of May sometime, something like that. I would not be surprised if when the Sox go to Boston, and this is not something they're planning, but when the Sox go to Boston the beginning of June, right after the draft, if Kopech is in the rotation at that point.
Do they have a doubleheader that he might start? Isn't there a possibility of that happening?
There's a doubleheader in Kansas City, not this weekend, but the weekend after. And I don't think they'll call him up for one game. It just doesn't. I don't think that, you know, they have Hector Santiago, they have Chris Volstead. They could turn to a Tyler Danish if they want to, but they have two guys. Remember, they have eight relievers, first of all, and they have two guys on that staff who are stretched out and can pitch long innings. So I would guess for just that one doubleheader, they're going to, you know, they may add another arm. Well, they're going to add another player. Obviously, you get the 26th guy, but I would guess it's Hector or Volstead getting that start in that doubleheader.
Okay. So as the season goes on, what are some of the things that are on your list of what you're paying attention to with this White Sox team?
Well, you obviously pay attention to all the young guys. You know, that's the most important thing. And that's not any slight to a guy like James Shields, who's done very well so far and has been a phenomenon. I know people don't like the mentor story and the guidance and the leadership, but he really has been, you know, just phenomenal for that clubhouse. And I think he has kind of an attitude towards life that I know I would like and that everyone would probably like, just very laid back and just kind of goes with what's going on. And, you know, that's that. You know, not much more you can do than be prepared, work hard, and be ready to go. But, you know, you want to see how Moncada develops. I think there's too much with Moncada right now of taking the temperature every 2 days. You know, the guy has less than 400 plate appearances in the majors. Yeah, he's striking out too much. He's not hitting off-speed pitches. But he also leads the majors in, you know, hard hit percentage, which shows he is making some contact and good contact. You know, let him have a few months. Let him get to June. And, you know, if he's still hitting 170 or whatever in June, then you may have to think about a little break for him. But you watch that. You know, you watch when Jimenez comes up. You watch when he gets healthy and gets back, first of all. And you watch when Kopech comes up. You watch the guys in the minors, especially that Winston-Salem team, which is absolutely loaded. You watch when Robert comes back from his thumb injury. And then, you know, there's some interesting little sub-stories at the major level. I think Bruce Rondon is going to be a great story because there was never a question that that guy had ability with Detroit. Just for some reason, he didn't fit. There was some, I don't want to say behavior issues, but just some work issues there with him. And sometimes it takes that one change to make a difference. And, you know, he could end up being, you know, I think he's 27, so it could be a bullpen piece in the future or it could be a good flippable piece for Rick Hahn. So just, he's had two great outings. You know, let's see where he is at 8, 9, 10, 12 outings. But just stuff like that, a lot of things to pay attention to. And as is the case of the rebuild, it's, excuse me, not all at the major league level.
Is it worth it for you? I mean, you're with the major league team, but maybe to take 4 or 5 days here or there to go see what's going on in Charlotte or Kannapolis or wherever else?
Yeah, I don't want to slight anyone at Charlotte, but, you know, like Charlotte last year was loaded with prospects. I don't think there's as many frontline prospects at Charlotte this year. There are good players. I mean, I think Charlie Tilson is an example. Ryan Cordell both have a chance to help this team in some way in the future. And then, of course, Michael Kopech's there. I think the team that's loaded this year.
Birmingham.
And then, you know, Birmingham, great, but Winston-Salem.
Okay.
Yeah, it just has a ton of problems. Mike Rodolfo is killing the ball right now. A guy like Joe Booker has, you know, had an exciting run for the team. So I think there's a lot of, you know, good Dane Dunning, Dylan Cease as part of the rotation. So, yeah, I mean, at this level, I try and do, even if I'm not there, one minor league story a week that doesn't have to do with the major league team necessarily. And then our associate reporter for the summer, Max Gelman, does like a roundup two times a week. So, yeah, we're on it. You know, I mean, you have to pay attention to the whole picture. And, you know, I mean, the Sox haven't made this clear, but they've pretty much hinted that, you know, this is not a year where they, you know, not believe, but this is not a year designed to win. That's maybe more 19 for sure, 20. So you got to look at everything that's feeding into this picture. And a lot of that is the guys, even if they're 2 or 3 years away in the minor leagues.
Did you feel bad as a Michigan alum when they beat Loyola?
I did not. I enjoyed the Loyola story. I covered Loyola for in another lifetime. I covered the Horizon League Championship when David Bailey played Martel Bailey, his brother, UIC Loyola, at the Cleveland Convocation Center in front of hundreds of people there. And it was one of the more memorable games I've covered. And I've covered a lot of games, but come on. Yeah, I went to Michigan. I also knew after that game and watching what Villanova did to Kansas that we were in a lot of trouble in that championship game. And Villanova legitimately might be one of the better college teams in the last, what, 5, 6, maybe 7, 8 years.
They actually have the most wins. If you look over the last 5 years, they've got more wins than anyone in college basketball over that stretch, except for the Derrick Rose era Memphis squad, whose wins don't exist anymore.
I think I don't know what Jalen Brunson's going to be in the pros. I haven't really followed him enough, but just watching him in that game, he already looks like he's got the pro mannerisms. You know, the way he's able to kind of create space with the off arm and not get called on that, which sometimes happens at the college level. So I think he already is kind of a pro player waiting to go. So it'll be interesting to see how he – but, I mean, congratulations to them. Jay Wright's a quality coach, good guy, good program overall there right now. So, hey, you know, sometimes you just get beaten. That's what happened to Michigan that night.
Merk, I appreciate you jumping on. Thank you for the great intel on what the White Sox are going through this past weekend.
All good. Go Vikings. We'll talk again soon, hopefully.
Indeed. Go Vikings. Thanks to Merk. He's right. And so is Amanda. Amanda Kashubi is right. I need to get on that. Some HF Mafia t-shirts would be a good idea. So everyone over at HF Athletics, at home of Flossmoor Athletics, your media people that are out here, we need like some Vikings, like red, white, and gray HF Mafia t-shirts. We will wear them proudly. We're talking some more baseball. We heard what's going on with the White Sox. What was it like for the Cubs the past couple of days? I'm going to talk with Mark Gonzalez about that next here on The Score.